am Plato on the line. This is the commentary.ca. Hugo Bonjean joins me once again. The best-selling author of In the Eyes of Anahita is on to discuss his new novel, Seeds of Germination or Termination. It's a topical and alarming story of a scientist who steals her company's germinator seeds to protect the planet and her daughter. The book sheds light on Terminator seeds and how they could end up destroying ourselves. The story is set just under 100 years from now and is a look at what might be, as well as a warning for us today. Hugo Bonjean is the CEO of Quantum Shift Media and chair of Sustainable Harvest International Canada. HugoBonjean.com is his website. Seeds is published by Eagle Vision and retails for $20.95. Please welcome back to the Plato Online program, Hugo Bonjean. Good morning, Mr. Bonjean.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Just how successful was In the Eyes of Anahita?
In the Eyes of Anahita has quite literally changed people's lives. It has really touched people in a way way beyond what I ever could have, you know, could have wished for, could have had imagined. So the book's now available nationwide through all bookstores. It actually has been for the last 3 years, and it was a national. It became a national bestseller within its first 9 months.
And this book, Seeds,
mm-hmm.
what compelled you to write, I mean, this is an important subject, of course, and what compelled you to write it in the form of a novel?
Well, Seeds, I read actually, the seed for Seeds was planted 2 years ago when I read the book from Vandana Shiva, and it's called Stolen Harvest, and I was absolutely so shocked and appalled by what I learned of what was going on in the seed industry. But I also, you know, realized that not a lot of people were reading that kind of nonfiction work. And so that's why I decided to dedicate a novel on the subject to really create wider awareness on the topic. And also based on the experience I had in the Eyes of Anahita, I had learned that storytelling was really a very powerful vehicle to move people to social and environmental action.
As a writer, is it fun to write a novel? I've never written a novel.
It is. It's a very powerful process, I find. It takes me a long time to just ponder the idea and study it and just let it all, you know, simmer in my head without really forming a story, but it's more the topic material. And then once I start writing, I really live the story, and it goes actually very fast. I mean, it's a number of weeks or a few months, and you know, it's over, but it's a very intense period.
Who's on the cover here? Is this a stock photo, or is this a photo that you actually commissioned for the book?
The picture on the cover is the character Gaia in the book. It's not a stock picture. It's actually a picture that I took 2 years ago, when I was doing volunteer work in Central America in the jungle. I had taken my family there to expose my kids to how three-quarters of the world population lives. And so we actually helped out at the Sustainable Harvest International Project in southwestern Belize with the Mayas, stayed in a jungle village with no electricity and no running water for a week. And that picture I actually took during that trip.
So let's go into what the book is about. Seeds is about what?
Seeds really is, it's a fast-paced adventure story, but within the novel I really search for the foundations of sustainability, or what the key principles and building blocks are. And I use the seeds industry and our food supply really as the topic material to get to that, but it goes way beyond the seed industry and our food supply.
And the character in the book, the foremost character is Nayla, right?
Yeah.
And she's a top scientist at Carsanto.
Mm-hmm.
Carsanto is sort of like Monsanto, if we had to pick a company. I guess, is Monsanto the leading company in this field?
Monsanto is the leading company in the field is the Delta Land and Pine Company. But the Delta Land and Pine Company has been bought by Monsanto, so in essence they currently are, through their subsidiary, the Delta Land and Pine Company.
So she works for this company called CarSanto, and she's a scientist, and she's also on its board. And as I said in the introduction, she steals the Terminator seed, right?
She actually steals the Germinator seeds.
What is the difference between the two?
Well, what I've created in the book to, you know, just for the plot line and the fact that, you know, we were looking at sometime in the future, is I created a mutating, and that version does not exist. I mean, the Terminator seed technology does exist today, but the mutating version that I talk about in the book does not exist. And I'm very clear in the afterwards of the story as well on that. And so if you have a mutating germinator seed, the mutating germinator seed, which Nyla steals, is actually a seed that is resistant to the Terminator technology. And it would allow farmers, by planting those seeds again, to go back to, saving their own seeds in essence.
So how long, Terminator seed technology, I remember hearing about it years ago. Some people may not be familiar with it. It's these seeds. Is it anything that you can grow, or is it mainly sort of wheat and those sorts of things?
It's basically a genetically modified technology, and so they can put the technology pretty much in any seed. It currently is banned for any commercialized use. But of course, no company ever invests into something they don't plan to commercialize at any point in time. But in essence, what it is they plant a dioxin cell into the seeds, and upon germination, when the seed comes in contact with a trigger, it renders its offspring sterile. So all the seeds that plant would produce are all sterile seeds and could not. The farmers couldn't basically save those and grow again.
So they're not used anywhere in North America?
No, they're not.
There was a great push. I mean, I'm sort of wondering, just historically, the seed company would advance this technology for what purpose?
They basically advance it for the purpose of protecting their patented GMO traits. And so what they wanted to do is, and they're currently, you know, they're still lobbying and they're working on different alternatives of the same technology that they're trying to get approved. But in essence, what they want to do is the seeds that they've patented with certain GMO traits, they want to protect those traits and make sure that farmers have absolutely no chance of saving seeds of that kind and replanting them without paying the company its license fees. And so if they add the Terminator technology or a variant of that in it, they actually can completely control that process.
And this ban, does it look like it'll stick anytime soon?
Bans are always up for renewal.
Yeah.
And so they are working hard. They're the ETC organization, which I actually got in the book, the website's there, and the Ban Terminator campaign, they really are very closely on top of that. But currently, Europe has been a big, has resisted strongly against Terminator seed technology, but there's something, it's a variant that's currently out there, which they call zombie seeds now. And Europe apparently is warming up to that variant of the technology. So it's really, I mean, it's a whole subject material that I think is very disconcerting and most people are not aware of. And in essence, what I'm trying to do with the novel is, apart from the fact that, you know, I want to make people think about the foundations of sustainability, is also alert them to what's been going on in our seed industry.
And the fact that it could mutate, which you write in the book, is very much a possibility, isn't it?
Well, that is. I mean, it's and certainly, it's a general possibility for GMO seeds. We currently have the GMO bank, the seed bank that a lot of people have heard about up in Norway. The problem with the whole concept of preserving heritage seeds is once you have GMO seeds out, you have something which is called genetic drift. and, you know, the bees in the wind do their work. And these GMO traits could transfer to other, you know, to other plants or within the same species. And in essence, what that creates is biological pollution, and there's no way you can clean it up. And so even if things go wrong, if you have to start or restart with your heritage seeds, it's not necessarily, you know, that not necessarily will work.
In the book, she Nayla escapes to a place called the United Canadian Communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's Canada in 2004, is it?
Well, it's more than Canada. I what I wanted to do, and that comes down to the sustainability aspect. I think currently with our society, we're at the crossroads. And the crossroads is there that we can either do one of three things, either one of two, I guess. And the third one, if we could be something that rolls out of it, either we can embrace the new technologies today wholeheartedly and really start working towards sustainability, or we can hold on to our old technologies and try to defend the whole culture of living on oil and gas, which, as we know by now, is not sustainable. And what I've done in the book really is created three societies. One society, you know, what I call the United States of Bolivar, which is Latin America, that has embraced early on the new technologies, and as a result has become a sustainable society with a, you know, a good lifestyle and that is technologically advanced. And then on the other end, I've created a society that really has tried to hold on, which I've called the American Confederacy, to those old technologies. And I think if the latter would play out, then we're going to have a knee-jerk reaction to that, and that is people that really don't want it. It might not be sustainable, and we might end up in a society that is way less technologically advanced, and that moves more in towards an agricultural community society.
We are at a critical time, aren't we?
We are.
And do you find that we're compelled to live more sustainably today?
I think we have no other choice.
But do you find that people are living that way? That they realize this?
I think there's a huge realization out there. I think a lot of people are puzzled as to how to do it and are concerned with how little influence they necessarily have. Or wonder sometimes if their, you know, their small actions make a difference, and they do.
So, like changing light bulbs and that sort.
Absolutely, it is. You know, I always tell people we didn't get here overnight. We're not going to get out of it overnight. But it's an evolutionary process, and we have to, you know, every one of us has to do their little step. And the important is to pick. The important thing is always to pick something, to start working towards it, and once it's a habit, take something else, and don't stop in that process.
You live sustainably in your community there. I guess you live just outside of Calgary, do you?
I live just outside of Calgary. I wouldn't say I live sustainably. I'm you know, I do a lot of things to reduce my footprint and to live as sustainable as I can. But you know, sure, my clothing comes from China somewhere, and I'm not quite sure what colony this is made of.
But for some people who don't even care, they find it a source of consternation because they find it either too difficult or too expensive to change their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your experience as well?
That it is. I can't say it's too difficult. I actually think it's an interesting path of discovery. I like to learn and try new things, and a lot of these things are actually things that, you know, our past generations knew. I think we should be able to know these things. I want to know, you know, we have our own goats and we milk those goats and make our own cheese from time to time. Well, it's a very interesting process to understand how, you know, how you make cheese. But you also develop a much bigger gratefulness for the food that you get. If you know, the milk comes from the goats, well, you have to take care of the goats in order to get good quality milk. I do my own hunting with bow and arrow, and, we eat deer and elk meat. I have enormous respect for the animals that feed me. And, during winter time, feed them back with my hay.
You spend a lot of time in Central America, do you?
I have, certainly during the years that I was working for Marriott. And then 2 years ago, I spent about 3 weeks there. As I said, because I want my kids to experience how the majority of people on our planet live.
How old are your kids?
They're now, the oldest is now 18. Now I've got a 16-year-old and I've got a 14-year-old.
How did they find the experience going down there?
They thought it was absolutely great. I was really curious about it because, they have their Xbox and they're into whatever kids are into here in North America.
Yeah.
But it took them really 24 hours to settle in. The first 24 hours were hard. There's no light in the evening. There's kerosene lamps and there's big spiders and all kind of things out there. But it took them 24 hours to settle in. And the culture shock, I always tell people, is not really going over there. It is a culture shock going over there, but the biggest culture shock is coming back.
And in the book, you were talking about how in the future, those countries in Latin America have moved towards more sustainable technology.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the sense that you get today, that they have done that? Or is this a prediction on your part?
I actually have the sense they're moving faster than we are. And I think it's for a very simple reason. I mean, first of all, Brazil is moving very fast in that direction. I think China is probably moving faster than we are at this point in time on that as well. Not that I'm really all that familiar with China, but certainly Brazil is moving very fast ahead on alternative fuel. And the very simple reason is there is much less big vested interest in old technology there. They're all developing countries, and they're looking for the new things, and they're embracing the new technologies faster than we do, simply because here there's so many vested interests that try to protect their interest in maintaining the old ways and the old technologies.
On this book tour, you've traveled a great deal already, have you?
I have.
Oh, where have you been?
I've been pretty much anywhere between Winnipeg and Vancouver.
And the reaction to the book has been what?
It's been great. It's the reviews so far were very, very good. I've had some really well-known names in that world, reviewing the book. Like Vandana Shiva is definitely the most well-known activist in the whole seed issue in the world, and she actually endorsed it. And then I've got Maud Barlow on that list as well. So the reviews came back really well. What's always, though, even if you have good reviews, what's always, or certainly for me, was a big question mark, and you anticipate comments, but you don't have them, is what does the reader base and what does the fan base say about it? And actually, in the past week, for the first time, I received on a daily basis now almost emails from my fan base, and they're all good.
Well, Hugo, I appreciate you taking the time to come on today. It's a compelling story. Congratulations on it, and continued good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
The book is called Seeds of Germination or Termination. It is published by Eagle Vision. $20.95 is the price. HugoBonjean.com is his website. Hugo Bonjean on the line. I'm Joseph Flatter.